Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
1, 2, 3, 4. Filled with awe and fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Park.
Look, he needs no introduction. A man of many talents sits next to Hannah Hillam at every Comic-Con.
Every.
You know him from Permafriends and Mothman's Compendium of Southern California. It's Kaveh Taharian.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited.
Nailing these intros.
Lovely. Beautiful job. I do them as well. It's a little bit like stress-inducing because you got to make sure you want to give everybody their proper credit for what they did without fumbling it. But yes, I appreciate it. It's weird to hear all those things that I've done.
That's always like a tell for how your self-esteem is doing that day,
yes.
Sort of thing.
I'm just like, that's it. All I heard was, I sit with Hannah. I'm here to help Hannah. That's it. That's all I'm here for.
No, I just love like my friend Megan Baker, who's been on the show a bunch. Mm-hmm. She was on the Percast recently, the other podcast I do, and I called her Bryce Dallas Howard champion, which I'm just like,
okay,
you know, adds a little flair, adds a little personality.
Yeah.
We're also just looking right now at a Jurassic Park logo that says Just Married.
Just Married. That's
like,
right.
That's the dinosaur in the room at this point.
The dinosaur in the room is this lovely T-Rex that you got me with the mouth that moves, which I've been playing with like it's a fidget spinner for the past 25 minutes. And I will probably continue to do so even after we stop recording.
It's part of, I mean, what are dinosaurs if not fidgetable?
Yes.
Is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, I feel like when Hannah introduced us, Hannah, mm-hmm. who's an incredible comic artist.
Lovely person.
The mush inside her brain is the mush inside my brain.
And which is the mush inside my brain as well.
Yeah.
Collective mush,
I feel like
conscious.
That was like an introduction, especially when I met Sarah as well. It was like, hey, these people
got married.
Jurassic Park. Yes. Wedding thing.
So for people who don't know, because you weren't at our wedding, yeah. We got married at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles.
That too.
And we decided to do our ceremony in front in the big foyer where there's a T-Rex and a Triceratops. Skeleton or fossils sort of like attacking each other. And we did something that was very unconventional, which is my family's from Iran, and you do like a big sofra act, which is like this big table spread of all these very traditional things that are symbolic of stuff. And I'm pretty sure we're the first people to ever put that in front of giant dinosaur bones and make that the backdrop for our wedding.
I was going to say you have a copy of Jurassic Park on VHS on the table, yeah. too. Other sacred family.
It's part of an ancient Persian tradition, yes, loving the Jurassic Park movies. But yes, and then unbeknownst to me, so, you know, we did it at the museum. It was like all this beautiful stuff that was happening and all this crazy, like, you know, dioramas of different animals. And about, I don't know, probably 11:30, 11:45, Sarah's like, you got to come with me outside right now. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we're dancing and having fun and doing whatever. She's like, you have to come right now. I had no idea.
Whoa.
Apparently, she had tracked down an old Jurassic Park Jeep. And that was the thing that we left the wedding in. We didn't get a limo. We had a Jurassic Park Jeep. And one of her friends made this Just Married sign, which, you know, takes place in the Jurassic Park logo. But instead of saying Jurassic Park, it says Just Married. So we drove off. And everybody was singing, da na 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 na.
Oh my God.
Walking away. It was pretty fun.
It is that thing that I've been talking with other people recently. I feel like adults who sort of maintain our, you know, it's, and I don't even think it's people who maybe are in the creative industry like you are. You know, you were a first AD and now you're a brilliant comic artist and all this stuff. And like,
so kind.
It's not even just that of like creative people who like keep in touch with stuff like this. It's, you know, it's just people who are like, hey, the world is cruel and I don't want to let go of those things. And I guess I should just start at the very beginning. Do you remember seeing Jurassic Park or were you a dinosaur kid at all? Like, I remember how did it all come together?
I'm old enough to remember when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Yes. No, I very much. I think I was right in that sweet spot. So I went to film school, as we've talked about before, and I met quite a few people who had like a similar experience where like that ended up being a touchstone for everyone. So in 1993, I had just turned like 10 years old.
Oof,
so nice. I was like fucking in it.
Oh yeah. Like, I've mentioned this on many episodes that if you were, I would say under 10, there was, I mean, even actually up to probably 13, which you think PG-13, mm-hmm. that it was truly a flip of the coin if your parents allowed you to watch Jurassic Park. It didn't, I mean, because I know people that saw Jurassic Park when they were like 4 or 5, mm-hmm. but like I was 6 when I saw in theaters, like mm-hmm. people who were, again, like a preteen who weren't allowed to yet or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, my ex is Mormon and like, she wasn't supposed to see it, you know, she was a little bit older and stuff like that. Like it's stuff like that where it's just, so for you, you were like primed and locked in.
I was primed and locked into it. And in like a lot of ways, Jurassic Park, aside from just being this, you know, I'm sure you've talked about this plenty of episodes of like, it's not just the fact that it's the first and pretty much only real big movie that's about dinosaurs as far as like a franchise that we had seen, but of course it very famously ushers in this era of CG being like this. So it was like on all cylinders at that age. Mm-hmm. I was like my mind blown. And the other thing I remember about it was the first time that I went to a movie and I remember coming out of the theater and seeing a fucking line around the block. I'd never seen that
interesting.
Before.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We went and saw it at like 11 a.m. or something. My mom was like, oh, let's go see that. Cause I was excited about it. She's like, yeah, let's go see it. So I remember maybe I just wasn't paying attention before cause we didn't wait in line to go in to see it.
Yeah.
But I remember coming out and being like, I have never seen a line like that for a movie. Yeah. And then I remember hearing the stories about Star Wars that people had talked about and like in the 70s of like people just coming out and there's lines around the block for it. And I remember having a moment of being like, even at 10 years old, being kind of like, oh, this is kind of like a Star Wars-y like fucking phenomenon type thing that's happening. So it really registered with me in like the sort of the enormity of it.
It is interesting that because Jurassic Park, I think, has famously caused a lot of people to become paleontologists.
Yeah, of course.
But I think it's also famously inspired a lot of people to become filmmakers as
Very much so, yeah.
And I had never thought about that angle too of like not only dinosaurs are real.
Yeah.
Oh, how do you make this?
Yeah.
But just maybe even an element of like, oh, there's this ecosystem in which movies come out there's a film industry and it's not just like, you know, I think a lot about like the Lord of the Rings extended edition mm-hmm. being sort of an extension, the next phase of that being like, wow, a movie set and like the camaraderie and all that stuff. But I feel like for me, like watching the James Earl Jones behind the scenes documentary, after like, you know, fall of 1994, Jurassic Park is going to come out on NBC. And mm-hmm. then the VHS being a huge thing. And then like a behind the scenes doc that played on NBC or whatever, like it just felt like, I mean, again, there were other things that came before that, but I feel like was just like the perfect storm of your imagination. And also like just thinking about the real world of how movies are made.
A lot of stuff congealed at that point. And then, you know, from there I went, so this would have been the summer before the fifth grade.
Yeah.
So the other thing I remember, which I don't remember the book, but I do remember that summer getting the book.
Oh, cool.
And it was also the same summer that my cousin, because I had a Walkman, by the way, but if people still remember what a fucking Walkman is, if you even know what a tape is, my cousin had a copy of Pearl Jam's 10 on tape. And I remember that summer just voraciously reading through this book, listening to Pearl Jam's 10 just on loop.
You just, it's like the T-Rex, like coming in, Jeremy's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's like that's definitely like a 90s vibe.
Oh, very much so. Oof. Yeah.
Like Beanie Babies are just coming out. X-Files premiered in September of 93.
Oh, I loved X-Files. Yeah. X-Files. Like, it was a great time, man. It was fucking people. We're not lying when we're talking about the 90s being great. It really was really fun.
But I love that because I do have very distinct memories of, because I was 10 when The Lost World came out. Mm-hmm. And I had not only distinct memories of waiting in line to see that, actually, mm-hmm. the movie theater that I saw Jurassic Park, Lost World, JP3. And then my dad and I ran down to Orange County to see Fallen Kingdom there a few years ago. Mm. That movie theater was just torn down and turned into Tesla dealership.
Insult to injury.
I know, RIP.
Ugh.
But that awful idea of not only is there, lines for the movies, but like marketing and the toys are coming out. Were you a dinosaur kid? The Jurassic Park toys and all that stuff?
I loved... You know, dinosaurs, I was just thinking about this because when you had asked me to be on this, and I was like, man, it's so funny that like it's like a rite of passage, obviously, right? But
yeah,
what a funny, insane thing that we all got to do in school where the teachers are basically like, hey, you know, the earth that we all live on right now?
Yeah.
There used to be these fucking crazy monsters that lived here like a really long time ago, and we don't have pictures of them, but we have weird bones. And they basically all like burst into flames when this comet, and like, I can't think of a more insane thing for like a 7-year-old to just spark their imagination in like a really crazy way.
Yeah. It's so, like the opposite of learning about death. You're like,
no, honestly,
there was so much life before this.
It's just like, especially if you're like on the visual kind of creative side of it. Like I remember like having very vivid, like, which is why some of the feather stuff to me still creeps me out, because I'm like, no, this is not conducive with like everything that I would thought in my
head. Sure, yeah,
but
yeah.
Of course, I understand like science is different and you learn more stuff. But no, I was very much into it. The Ankylosaurus was my favorite when I was
cool.
in the second grade. I had a poem that I had written about it for a class, which the only line I remember is that the Ankylosaurus is no midnight snack. If you try to eat him, he'll break your back.
Oh,
that was my version of, you know, I'm like the William Shakespeare of the second grade.
Wow. Everyone I've talked to recently since relaunching the podcast or whatever I want to call it, we've all been obsessed with herbivores that can fuck you up.
Because we're sensitive kids. And we're basically like, I will fuck you up because I have to, but I don't really want to.
Yeah,
I just
want
to be chill.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. I do want to, this, you just inspired me though to jump ahead a little bit to your Mothman.
Oh, yeah.
Is graphic novel the proper word for that comic
one's,
book?
That one's, so Mothman
guidebook,
is
kind of like a Dinotopia situation.
Like a humor travel guide that's like a, it's, yeah, there's drawings in it and stuff. It's not technically a graphic novel because there's no proper, there's a story-ish to it.
Yeah.
But there's not like a narrative, there's not like a clear narrative the way there are in like the Permafriends books, for example.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where like, I find that stuff so delightful because again, like the original Jurassic Park book is framed as like the Isla Nublar incident and like,
yeah.
You know, it's My dad and I's favorite $10 word of Michael Crichton's work, verisimilitude.
The
notion that the thing that you're reading or engaging with is a document of something that actually happened.
Right.
Which he was such a fan of. And even Dinotopia, which is another huge touchstone of dinosaur media, which is like framed as almost like, you know, I was going to say Charles Dickens, Robinson Crusoe, or like a, you know, like, Robert Louis Stevenson sort of like, you know, Treasure Island or whatever.
Like a leave behind prop almost or something that you find. Which by today's standards feels like a marketing thing almost. Like,
well, yeah, it's become such a huge, because everyone are such lore hounds.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I was going to say, your Mothman, again, compendium.
Yeah, like yes.
It's framed again as this sort of like Mothman going through and seeing all the cryptids. I guess, you know, because as you're saying, of, you know, these are these crazy, insane creatures that existed. Do cryptids occupy almost a similar space in that way? Or they're more exciting because you're like, they could be real? Like where did that interest come in? Because I've actually never really been that much of a cryptid person, but it is such a huge touchstone as far as like when you think of like ocean stuff, you know, monsters, and then cryptids are almost like, I guess maybe the sensitive person's version of like badass monsters.
I was going to say the same thing that you were just talking about like the herbivores with like spikes and shit, where it's like, I mean, a lot of these cryptids are just, to me, it's like funny. It's like Bigfoot is just like, just leave me alone. Like, just fucking leave me alone. Let me do my shit in the woods. It doesn't matter. Stop taking pictures of me. Like, just fuck off. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I relate to that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love your Nessie. So fun. Plesiosaur and that notion. And that's another thing that I haven't quite delved into on the podcast, at least, is that notion that, I mean, which is, I mean, Lost World sitting on the screen right now in your place. It's like, which Michael Crichton was referencing, like this idea that maybe something has survived, that, you know, it, like, was that another angle of that kind of interested you too?
Well, I mean, part of what they say, I mean, I'm going to slaughter this definition, but it's basically like a cryptid is like it's like something that science hasn't technically like classified as like a real thing yet.
Yeah.
So it sort of exists in two spaces of being like real, but it's, or maybe it's like, you don't know if it's real because science hasn't decided officially that it is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily, it means it's unreal. You know, so for example, like a squid in the water, like a giant squid forever was like this thing where they're like, we don't know, like there's weird lore about it. And that ends up being like a real thing. They just sort of hadn't been able to track it down. And so to me, it's always like, it's rooted in this idea of not fucking knowing what exists and being not just okay with it, but just loving the idea that, like, you know, especially now, like, everyone's like, oh, I know everything. And I've gone on like a Reddit sub thread and I've gone on this like Wikipedia rabbit hole. And I'm like, fuck you. No one knows anything, you know? And so like the idea of cryptids just allows me to sort of be like, okay, like, let's just, it's, even if it's dumb, it doesn't matter. Like, even if it's not real, that's not the point. The point is to sort of subscribe to this idea that like, you don't know everything and that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't necessarily be scary. It should be fun because that means that like, there's something exciting that you don't know. It could be one thing. It could also be something horrific, but it can sort of go in whatever direction.
I mean, to even date this episode a little bit, although this will, I think it's been a while since, but like they recently did the largest sweep of Loch Ness.
Yeah. I saw that a couple weeks ago.
You know, it's like, nope, nothing.
But that's really important though, right? It's I think it, whether or not Loch Ness is actually, whether or not the monster is there is besides the point.
Yeah,
I think like everybody is kind of coming together to agree that like this thing should, it's like a mascot, right?
Yeah.
It's like a fucking sports team mascot of some sort. It's like, it's something to rally behind, but instead of it being about a sport, it's about like, wouldn't it be cool if there was a giant, you know, fucking dinosaur in this lake or in this lock or whatever?
And
like, that's cool. That's all you really want. It's a form of play as an adult in a way that like, I think is really important and like necessary, not just to be in the creative space, but also just to like allow yourself to have fun a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And to not, like you're saying, not feel like you have to know everything. I had this just thought now of like, because we're finally starting to get rid of all the racist caricature mascots. Mm-hmm. What if we just replace them with cool dinosaurs?
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Everything should be a dinosaur. I mean, there's nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got my vote.
Yeah, Atlanta, it's like the Atlanta Ankylosaurus.
Ankylosauruses, it's perfect. Gosh,
Yeah. So, it's this thing that I also think about, too, as like dinosaur adults or whatever, Jurassic Park adults or people who stay in touch with this stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a phase where you like got out of it, or was it this thing you loved Jurassic Park as a kid and then you were like, I'm going to go to film school. Did that kind of carry through as an adult or?
Yeah.
Because I know that you, because we met recently and you had like switched from being a first AD to now being like, you know, comic artist and podcaster and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Was that something that carried through or did you have a phase where you're like, I don't need this shit anymore?
No, I don't think there was ever a phase where I was like too cool for it. I mean, I might not have necessarily been. So you have to remember too, even when my first AD years were like, that was my day job kind of
thing. Yeah.
So I was still working on my own projects and scripts and stuff. Not so much in the fantastic realm, just sure. because in film that ends up being a lot more, at least for me, more complicated and expensive. But if you try and write,
you were like in your brain being like, yeah. how do I film this? Like, yeah. what's the budget?
It literally, exactly. Yeah. But that's sort of what's been so freeing about going back into, cause my first love was illustration and drawing and stuff. So, that's what's been freeing about going back into that is like, well, I could just draw whatever the fuck I want and I don't have to worry about the practicality of it. I just have to worry about the practicality of being able to draw it and put it on a piece of paper. But no, I don't think I was ever like Jurassic Park, especially the first one, yes. is still like this. It's not just that it's this fun, entertaining movie. It also still has these like, you know, just enough kind of big brain themes of man and trying to control nature and life finds. It's not like super duper deep, but it's deep enough where you're like, even in the angsty teen years where you're like too cool for stuff. I remember thinking like, yeah, no, it's still, this is cool. This has got it fucking going on. Like,
well, yeah. And I think it's timeless for that reason. Yeah. I think it's just when I think about being 14 and seeing Jurassic Park 3 and almost that being kind of your first heartbreak. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I think like you said, you know, and you kind of just really crystallized it where it's like, I can imagine at any age discovering Jurassic Park and yeah, like having the fun. Little bit of big brain kind of,
yeah.
I mean, really trying to, you know, lessons that have become even more true and
very much so. Yeah.
But sort of that, yeah, that first sort of moment where you realize that not everything is great or like, you know, not every movie is perfect.
Sure. Right.
And I obviously have a lot of fun with Jurassic Park 3. I have a lot of love in my heart for that movie, but I just felt like it really was only until the word started getting out that like Jurassic World was happening that I was like, oh, okay.
Maybe.
And like, yeah. I bought a box of Jurassic Park Topps trading cards back when like you could buy that stuff for $10 still on eBay or whatever. Yep. I discovered, oh, there's a YouTube channel that Jurassic Collectibles where he talks about, you know, collecting Jurassic Park merch. And I'm like, wait, there's other adults who love Jurassic Park? Like,
see,
that was my journey back into it.
You know what's weird to me about it is I just assumed everybody loved Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
The idea that people would be into Jurassic Park seems like people would be into Oxygen or something.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why would you not be into this?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like literally every kid when I was in school. Yeah. It was like every kid was obsessed with it.
I guess for me, it was more of like, because when I think about Star Wars, it's like there was all the tie-in stuff. There was,
Right.
You know, a lot of the Star Wars. Well, I mean, and again, like I grew up at a point where like the special editions were so imminent that like, I never really grew up in a time without Star Wars. Whereas I feel like I can imagine people who were like, who were maybe 10 when Return of the Jedi came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you had that period like from like 1984 to when the VHSs for the original trilogy came out, where you were this is a dry spell, like 95 or something, or 93, or...
I think I remember hearing an interview with Kevin Smith where he talked about that specifically.
Oof.
And because he talked about the importance of the toys.
Yeah.
Because he said that we all went and saw, you know, Empire Strikes Back, and then we saw Jurassic Park. We went and saw Return of the Jedi.
Ultimate double feature.
Yeah, right. It would be fucking great. He's like, we went and saw Return of the Jedi, and we came out of the theater, and he's like, it's not playing on TV. You don't have a fucking, like, Blu-ray that you're watching. He's like, all we had were the toys. And he's like, the toys became this really important part of us replaying it and sort of, like, engaging in this, like, trying to remember it as well as we could and trying to, like, create our own stories with it. And so he was like, it was one of those conversations where he's talking about, like, you know, he misses those days of, like, there is this beauty in, like, not having something and having those limitations where it ends up sparking this creative side of you. But it was specifically about that dry spell that you're talking about, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, the period between JP3 and Jurassic World, 14 years, I believe. Yeah, because 2001 and then 2015.
Was it really that much of a gap? Holy shit.
Like, it's wild to think that could even happen again. Like, the gap between that, between something like, because it's not like JP3 did bad.
I was going to say, it did pretty well, right?
Yeah, it just didn't do, you know.
Gangbusters. I mean, what's Joe Johnson? Is the director?
Johnson,
poor guy. I mean, it's like taking over Spielberg. Spielberg's job is like, that's not an easy job to do. And he wasn't even necessarily somebody who had directed that many films, I think, at that time.
Yeah, no, he
is an ILM
Rocketeer
guy.
And then, what else? I can't remember off the top of my head. But for you, when you were in film school.
Yeah.
Was like, because I still think like, even when I felt like I was too school, like not that I ever felt too cool for school for Jurassic, but like, I think I've said to you before, I'm like, I was just like a Criterion hoe in college and like discovering Godard and all these things.
Sure.
And it was like, I don't know. I felt like for a while, I definitely like, I had my 22nd birthday was a Jurassic Park birthday, which maybe that really ushered back in my like Jurassic Park into my adult life.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Was that the case in film school? You're saying for me? No, because
Or just in when you were in film school, were you somebody that did you go because you wanted to like be? Yeah, I mean, again, what was your film school experience like? I'm just curious.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of framing it, it's interesting because I went to USC for grad school, which in I started 2009, so I think like 2007 or 8. Very famously, George Lucas donated like a bajillion fucking dollars.
Because I went to UCSB, and all of us at UCSB were like, "Oh, mother, God damn it!" So, like, you know, like I mean, I love UCSB, and like, I like have no regrets. I'm so glad I went there. But it was just very funny where it was like the circuit of like, there's probably people at UCLA and people like, at NYU, and we're just like.
Nope. Yeah.
Can we have some of that? Yeah, you know, like, oh, that's so funny. Wow. That's such a recovered memory.
I got in when the getting's good.
Oof. Oh, I love that.
I think I was the part of the second class that taught, that went fully digital.
Whoa.
So
interesting.
Like, basically they were shooting on, you know, the earlier, the typical USC, the master's program is usually about 3 years. And the first year is all kind of foundation stuff. So usually they would make you shoot on film for the first couple, classes. But I think the class before us was the first one. We were all shooting on fucking EX1s, I think is what we were filming on, the old Sonys.
But those have the P2 cards?
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. The P2 cards.
I'm like, it's just like the...
Yeah, right? I'm like, that's a letter. I haven't heard that those two letters or that letter number together forever. But anyway, long story short, we were living in the shadow of the Lucas method. The head of the sound department was Tom Holman, who invented the THX method. who very famously every fucking test that we would take, the last question was always, what does THX stand for? And then and the correct answer, quote unquote, to Tom was, the Tom Holman experience. So, and if you didn't circle Tom Holman experience, he would mark you down for it. It's a little tidbit of fun for you.
So funny.
But he would show us, he showed us like Star Wars without any of the sound on it, like the scene in the beginning of the first one of A New Hope where Darth Vader comes in and, you know, breaks all that shit up. So, you know, he had clips of it, or sorry, the rough cuts of it before any of the sound got laid. So you heard all the production sound.
Wow.
He played us like the layers of Raiders of the Lost Ark of the giant rock boulder scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
To just sort of describe like, here's how layering sound works. Here's how audio comes out. Anyway, this is all a very long way of saying that like the Spielbergian kind of, method of filmmaking of like that new, not necessarily new Hollywood, but like the new Hollywood blockbuster.
Sure. Yeah.
Is very much what a lot of the teachers taught. So it was less about, which is not to say we didn't watch any of the sort of, as you know, the snooty Criterion stuff.
Yeah.
It tended to be more new Hollywood and more in that vein. I don't think that George Lucas was like supervising what we were being taught or anything.
Sure.
I just think that like the school and USC is like a very, industry focused.
Well, yeah, you're in LA. It's like you're really prepped there. Whereas UCSB, at least because actually it's funny because right as I left UCSB, they got a huge donation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so the people who were like the few classes after me, it's like brand new
they had stage and
like green screen spaces and all this stuff and sound like Foley rooms and stuff and everything. Like, you know, I was doing Foley like in like the teacher's office, you know, on the weekends or whatever, which was also very fun. But this just made me think as far as, because I've recently talked like fun Jurassic trivia and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we were kind of jumped back and forth with stuff like that. I feel like only recently, more as an adult, did I learn that like George Lucas was kind of really supervising the sound of Jurassic Park because Spielberg.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Oh, because Spielberg was off doing Schindler's List.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, again, because like, you know, we showed me an incredible Jurassic documentary. I'm so thankful you showed it to me. And it's wild to me that more people haven't seen it since I've posted about it. Since you showed it to me, hopefully more people in the Jurassic community have seen it. Jurassic Punk. But we're in the middle of a writers and actors strike right now. Yeah. It's all the credits and all these things and work hours, you know, all the fun, you know, doing stuff in the industry. But that was like kind of a trivia point of like, and it's, I think it's just been one of those trivia things that has been around, but it's like, you know, oh, okay. You're going off to, you know, you're going off to Europe to film a Schindler's List. You know, I'll help out. You know, I got all the guys here.
That's a pretty good George impression.
Skywalker Ranch. And, you know, but it's just that idea of, I don't know, the I feel like that generation of filmmakers, they were kind of the people to really like almost make it look really fun to make movies in a way.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I'm not the first person to ever say this by any means, but like, you know, they changed the industry and they made it all about, you know, these huge blockbusters. And George Lucas in particular, I think, understood. Again, I'm parroting stuff that I've just heard so many times. I'm hearing myself say this and I'm like, I'm just repeating stuff that I've heard over
this
and over
is,
again.
This is the shit that like you probably, and like what we've done where it's like, you're just, you know, it's that exciting bit of like not only connecting over the movie. And I think it is that thing of like Jurassic Park and then eventually Lord of the Rings. And, you know, I think some other movies since then.
Lord of the Rings, man. Talk about like, I was in college when that came. That was the other like big, I was talking to Sarah about this the other day. And I'm like, I just hear the intro music.
Yeah.
And I just like, I'm still like, I fucking love this movie so much.
I always joke that like the sort of, the only way that men were able to healthily cry in the early 2000s was watching Gandalf's death, you know? It's like, thankfully we can cry to many moments in Lord of the Rings and other movies,
okay. So your original point, we were talking about what the program was like. The USC is geared very much towards being, it's an industry school and their sole intention is to like get you a fucking job when you get out. Not in the sense that they're helping you get a job, but they're essentially like kind of pre-training you so that when you go on a set, and the USC mafia is a real thing. Like when you come out of school, if people know that you were in the program, they're like, oh, okay, who do you know? You know this person, that person? It's like, it's very like, you're just fucking plugged right in.
See, I feel like UCSB students lucked out in a way because I always felt like, when I came down to LA finally, it was like, if they're a USC person and you're like, I'm from UCLA, it's renew. Like,
so it's not even necessarily that we like you dislike the UCLA people. Honestly, the way I equate it was like USC teaches you, and this is the part about the program that I thought was really actually quite effective.
Yeah.
It makes you fucking so reliant on other people. It makes you like codependent on other people. And they're basically like, and the point of it is, it's not to be bad. It's to be like, you cannot fucking make a movie without other people. So if you fucking hate these people, you need to figure out a way to work with them.
Yeah.
And there's a famous class, or not famous, like within the program, the second semester is this class called 508. It's this class number called 508, where you make three short films throughout the course of the semester, and they pair you with two other people. So you're in these trios, but it's random. Oof. You have no idea who it is. They'll just randomly choose you. And so the first film, you'll rotate. So one film, you're the director.
Got it.
The second film, the writer director. The second film, you're the cinematographer. And then the third film, you're the editor and the producer.
Okay.
And so you just switch hats. So whether or not you fucking like these people or hate them, you are completely reliant on them to make the film work. And it's this excellent, I lucked out. Actually, two of my best friends from fucking SC are these two girls that I was paired with, Josie and Kelly, who I'm still dear friends with to this day. But like, that's rare. That like almost never happens in that class. So it teaches you to just be like, you can't do this on your own. You have to get along. And it's a lesson that I feel like I've taken into every fucking job I do, even the stuff that's not film based.
Yeah.
Where it teaches you to just be like, you need to get along with people at the end of the day and you need to fucking deliver no matter how much you want to like die on the inside.
Yeah. Well, and I will say that like the benefit again of like, because whether it was like imagined or whatever, the rivalry between USC or UCLA, I felt like whatever that was, I don't really know what it was or whether it was real, but it was more like everyone was happy to see people from UCSB.
Yeah.
Because we were like up there from the beach.
The neutral people. Yeah.
So I always felt like I felt very welcomed by everybody.
That's nice. But I don't think I ever met any UCSB people on like any of the sets. Again, it's like, it's very incestuous. Like you end up just being on all the USC sets. Too.
Yeah.
Because again, it's almost like army training or something where you're like, you guys are in the Marines, we're in the infantry. Yeah,
a lot of UCSB in animation, a lot of people, you know, got into other types of writing or whatever, but that's so fascinating.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
So we're sort of pre-programmed for it in a way, and like we're prepped and like ready to go, and like, you know, it's very easy, assuming you're not a total dipshit having gone through the program. Like you can come out of school and like, you know, be working on something, you know, you're not necessarily like the producer or the but it's also, we're not making, with the exception of like a couple people that really became very successful that were in our class, You're not necessarily having people who are like super artsy fartsy films. It's more like it's, you know, it's an industry school. Like they're there to make, they're there to teach you to be in the film industry.
Well, and I also feel like it's, as you get older, you feel less pressure to define your personality by stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, I like making things. Like, what can I make? How can I fun?
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Did you draw dinosaurs as a kid? Was that something?
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. I was, again, Ankylosaurus was the one that I used to, because the spikes are so fun and weird. And I, like, all over the back, and then the tail is like this big, like, fucking club of a thing. I remember, it's funny, who was I talking to? I was drawing something recently. Oh, I was drawing this thing, which I was going to show you, this weird Goomba drawing I have, which I'll explain to you later what that's for. I have this thing where every time I draw something that is reptilian, I'll draw the lips, and then I'll draw these like what look like bumps over the lips. And I realize it's because I spent so much time as a kid copying drawings of like a T-Rex or of a Velociraptor's face. And I remember that that's the way that the scales lined up over the lips.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's just like this weird thing that just embedded in the back of my brain. And I automatically do that, even now still as an adult.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yes, I spent plenty of time doing those things.
Did the Ankylosaurus scene, I don't know. Did that scene in Jurassic World stand out to you at all?
Yes. I actually was just, because I rewatched it last week.
Oh, cool.
This is Fallen Kingdom. And I remember being really excited that was like, I was like, oh my God, I don't think I just, for some reason, I didn't register because I only had seen that movie once. When it came out in the theater, which I actually liked that movie a lot more.
Oh, okay.
Than I remember being like, I kind of feel like that one got slept on a little bit because it was the because as far as the Jurassic World trilogy is concerned, I don't really like love any of them.
Yeah.
I think they're like whatever.
Yeah,
I get what they are. I get why they were so popular, but I they don't, you know, again, old man yells at cloud. Like they don't hold a candle to the original Jurassic Park movies that I saw when I was a young boy. But yes, I did. I did love that whole, just to talk about that movie for a second, like that whole fucking auction sequence is the most insane thing ever. And I fucking love it.
Yeah.
But yes, the Ankylosaurus and that was, it was very exciting. When
and even the one in, the one in Jurassic World meets the, when it gets flipped over.
Oh, I don't remember. I haven't seen Jurassic World in a long time. Oh shit. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That one's just to me, the thing that I really liked about the new trilogy was like, anytime that like a favorite dinosaur of mine got finally represented in that style, you know, because like the Carnotaurus is like,
ooh, which one was the Carnotaurus
in Fallen Kingdom, and then in Dominion, it's the one with like the bullhorns. It looks like the bullhorns.
Oh, okay.
Like when the volcano is happening,
yes,
faces off against the T-Rex.
Okay.
And so that was always like, especially because there's a really iconic scene from the Lost World book featuring them doing like camouflage.
Oh, really?
And so, it's just, they never replicated that scene because they didn't end up having a camouflage situation like that. But like, Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, ooh, I finally get to see a dinosaur that...
Childhood memory, or sorry, childhood aspiration unlocked.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Achieved.
And like how the in Jurassic World Dominion, there was the flying reptile, the Quetzalcoatlus. Yes. Like that's like, because it's like when we watch dinosaur documentaries, they always have one of those bad boys like... who's like, you know, 40-foot wingspan or whatever. At the Field Museum in Chicago, they have a life-size one. Like, look how big this is. I'll post this photo.
Jesus Christ. Like, it's huge.
It's just like that thing, terrifying. Like, taking down an airplane, and you're just...
Yeah.
Like,
I buy it.
Again, it's just the thrill of that those existed. And
so here's like a weird question that's probably... You can't separate one from the other. Do you consider yourself a dinosaur fan because you're obsessed with Jurassic Park? Or are you obsessed with Jurassic Park because you're obsessed with dinosaurs still?
It's funny because that's a question that I, too, ask.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I thought we just more dived into Jurassic Park first, but like...
Sorry, I got ahead.
No.
I'm also a podcaster, so I've already started to like ask these other questions.
That's usually the opening kind of question, but it's funny because I have been, as I'm just coming back into the show more and stuff, and it's been more in my mind, I almost realized that because I was just, I was six when the movie came out, that like, I definitely was a dinosaur person first, but like it almost feels like a technicality, like
yeah
you know, where you're like, because the Jurassic Park book came out in 1990, and like it was already optioned the moment it came out. I mean, it was optioned before it came
probably
out,
probably before. Yeah,
he was already all this,
was already in the, like an it, industry
I,
guy
I feel like it was one of those things where like when I see documentaries or see every time I see people talking about that situation again, like every few years, it'll be like James Cameron was 10 minutes away from getting the rights, or
right.
You know, Tim Burton was going to make it, and Tim Burton was going to make the Dinosaurs Attacks trading cards, but because of Jurassic Park, he decided to do Mars Attacks instead, and like stuff like that. And it's just like, it was in the air. Mm-hmm. Like my mom was a Spielberg fan. Mm-hmm. Close Encounters is her favorite movie, or West Side Story. It's like the, the slash.
Interesting.
All that stuff was in the air. And so I feel like, it's like the more I think about it, it's like, I was a dinosaur fan first, but I mean, what a great time, you know, 100%. To have like been like what was the thing about the dinosaurs? Technicality, being a kid. Oh, just kids like dinosaurs all the time. That's a forever thing.
Yeah.
Kids always have and always will.
Will. It's this thing that sparks so much of at least my imagination when I was in the second grade. I remember it very clearly. I remember like imagining all kinds of crazy shit. But I can't say that I've kept up with like my dinosaur knowledge necessarily. Sure. I don't necessarily remember all the different kind, like you being like, oh, like the only one I remember, like the Ankylosaurus was the one that I remembered as a kid that I liked so much. But I don't necessarily remember like half the other dinosaurs in terms of like being so super excited. I mean, I was excited to see them, but I didn't necessarily have that kind of emotional investment. So I feel like the Jurassic Park thing overtook it, which as I was rewatching some of these movies, I was thinking like, it's really crazy how these movies are like, they essentially, the franchise is so dominant and it's such a monopoly that like, there's really no, you would think that there, especially like with the advent of CG, you'd think there'd be like, well, 50 other movies about dinosaurs that are super popular.
Yeah. We never got our Marvel like superhero, like there was a few dinosaur movies like in the early to mid 90s, but not like the way superhero movies got or the way Westerns were.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's so strange. It's like, it's such a weird reflection of the studio system in general now, which is really bizarre. It's like, there's no space to have more than, it's like there, you can only have the Jurassic Park movies be about dinosaurs. Everything else is sort of like either bad or like, and it, you know, so I was rewatching Dominion today. And I realized I'm like, it's trying to be like five different movies at the same time. And the part of the problem, aside from that not being as interesting to watch, is that like, it's because it's a monopoly and it's the only movie. So they have to incorporate like the fucking, what's the scene? The one in Malta where they're like in the, you know, illegal arms, like trading section.
Black market,
The black market, like that could have been its own weird, small, like Guillermo del Toro movie of like dinosaurs.
But
mixed in with like this Mission Impossible Born Identity thing that happens. And then it also is like this Marvel movie where it's like trying to, you know, bring all these different threads in and like resolve all these stories. It's like, it's such a shame that there are not more movies that are just able to sort of run with the dinosaur theme. It's really strange how much it's dominant in that sense.
No, it's as much as I love Jurassic Park, I wish, we had all kind. And as I was trashing 60,
yeah,
65
we were just
before
about that
you,
earlier, yeah.
But I mean, obviously I want them to be good.
Of course.
But no, to your point, I mean, that's why I still love Dominion, because I think it's an embarrassment of riches. you know, to the detriment of the movie.
But
I think your point ultimately is like, yeah, it speaks to this larger issue of like, I think I just mentioned this like recently, but like, why, like, Dinotopia is such a big, is maybe not as like, you know, obviously not as popular as Jurassic Park, but it definitely was like an 80s dinosaur thing. And it's like, why didn't we have like a Dinotopia adaptation on like Stars to compete with Game of Thrones or something?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it is like
even a show, like a proper show. Yeah, like you're right. Like fucking, they're certainly throwing enough fucking money at these shows.
Yeah, yeah.
On cable TV, you'd think you'd have like a crazy big.
Yeah.
But again, it always goes back to like, well, what's a, I think maybe part of the problem is genre. Because really, like, especially the first Jurassic Park movie, it's really, you know, it's an adventure film. It's really just a horror movie, like, for the most part.
It's a horror movie that has an uplifting theme.
Yeah, it's got an uplifting theme. But, like, structurally and, like, you know, it was so surprising because we went and saw it accidentally in 3D for the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I knew this, right? But I don't think I actually had not seen it in the theater since.
Yeah, that's what was surprising to me.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's...
Since I had seen it as a kid.
It's one of those things where, like, it is... I almost think that, like throwback screenings should be more often because it is exciting to see movies in theaters.
It was
like,
fantastic. Yeah.
Like, I got to see Jaws in theaters for the first time last year. I saw...
You guys went to the fucking...
Selena.
To see it, right?
And I saw Selena in theaters.
Oh, no, right. Yeah.
Yeah, not Jaws, but I saw that in IMAX here.
Oh,
but
Sarah saw it at that same place, too.
Oh, yeah.
She saw Jaws out there, yeah.
But seeing Selena in theaters for the first time, because I was a kid when they came out, and there's just something... I don't know, it's just... cool.
There's no choir.
But like any just interesting observations or things poke out at you.
Yes. You know what? It blew my mind today. And I like hadn't even thought of this. I just had this realization today was Hammond. Okay. Wait, I have, let me try and streamline this as best as I can. Cause I had many thoughts as I tend to do. Also, I'm usually on a podcast where I have to talk about a musical, which I don't like. So it's, I don't necessarily have that problem where I have to share a lot of thoughts, but now I get to talk about something I really love. So there's one thing that really stood out to me that was really funny that I had not considered, which is Spielberg makes the first two movies.
Yes.
Spielberg makes these movies in the 90s. The movie industry itself is fundamentally different, obviously, than it is now.
Yeah.
What's really funny to me was looking at Hammond is basically the, what you would call the CEO, whatever, of like the villain, effectively. He's sort of the villain, but he's not really.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating about that character is not just that they try and make him sympathetic, but it's like, he's this guy who had the flea circus.
Yeah.
And in essence, I realize I'm like Spielberg being the auteur that he is. That's basically a studio head.
Yeah.
It's like a guy who owns a studio who loves this product. He gets mad at all these lawyers and other people trying to make it like one thing or another.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not corporate, even though he is corporate, right?
Yeah.
He's a moneymaker, but he's like, he's there for the circus. Like,
yeah.
He loves that thing. It's important to him. It's a thing that matters to him. It's a part, it's like he loves dinosaurs in a way as much as all the people who were there, the paleontologists and stuff, do. Fast forward to fucking Dominion, the corporate owner is, it's Campbell Scott.
Campbell Scott, yeah.
What's his character's name?
Dotson.
He's effectively like this cold, detached, super, you know, like he's like a pharmaceutical tech company.
Yeah.
CEO who owns this thing about dinosaurs, who's trying to extract what he can from dinosaurs in order to monopolize the the crop industry by having, you know, these locusts that are militarized and weaponized. And I don't know if this was intentional, but what a perfect metaphor for what has happened to the film industry.
Oh.
About these conglomerates coming in,
like
tech companies coming in, people who don't give a fuck about the thing that they're making. And feeling and only trying to extract some value from it so they can use it for some other thing to disrupt another industry and the corruption in that versus as much as the people, you know, I'm not saying that studio moguls are like fucking good people by any means. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But at the very least, you got the sense that a lot of them, they did love making movies. Like movies were important to them.
Yeah. I mean, my whole thing is I think I told you the Michael Eisner thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, he so deeply Michael Eisner so deeply wanted to be Walt Disney.
Yes.
He wanted to be loved.
Yes.
I don't get the idea that any studio execs now care about care about that.
They don't. They're the people.
Their self-esteem doesn't hinge on. This guy's the person who ran Walt, you know, Disney and the parks and all this stuff in the 80s and 90s. And it's like, you got the sense that, like, the end of the day, I think Jon Favreau could make a Citizen Kane, uh-huh, or Jon Favreau plays Michael Eisner. You go in the volume and you do all the different phases of Disney from the 80s, building Tokyo.
I would watch France, a Michael Eisner.
That's my pitch.
Cool, yeah.
But like that idea of like Rosebud, like, you know, yeah, on his deathbed, like he's going to be like, the people did not like love me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's Hammond. Hammond, like,
yep.
And I think what the difference between the book Hammond and the movie Hammond is that, like, there still was, like, you know, I think of the line in Jurassic Park, the birth of every little creature on this island, because so often, you know,
he loves it.
Studio execs and people who are middle managers are people who get so far removed from the process.
Yep, yep.
But Hammond, ultimately, his, like, sort of redemptive quality is that he still wanted to be there on the ground and see the work being done.
Yes.
And even help a little bit, which is, like, wild.
He's nuts. Like, he's totally, he never had control. He keeps trying, but there
that's
is this
the illusion.
Element. Yeah, that's the, you never had control. That's the illusion. But that just occurred to me when I was watching.
I love that take. I really love that take.
Oh, it's so,
that's so good.
Right? And it's crazy because the other thing I thought about was how much it's important that the first two movies anyway were Spielberg, which is auteur. And from there, they've all gone in this other direction of directors who, you know, they tried, obviously, but, you know, like we said, like, Joe Johnson is not necessarily a person who, like, has this really specific point of view and had this thing that he was trying to make it. Whereas somebody like the Alien franchise, for example, is a good parallel where, like, every movie they were like, okay, they ended up like, fuck, it was like fucking Ridley Scott. Then it was James Cameron. Then it was fucking David Fincher, who famously disowned this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jean-Paul Genet was the guy in the fourth one. For at least that run of like four movies, they understood that, like, the way to make that franchise really interesting is to, like, give it to, like, an auteur director, have them fucking run with it in a way that's totally different.
Yeah.
And that makes it stay alive. And I think that the thing that Jurassic Park did that in the sort of long term of the franchise is that the mistake that they made was not doing something similar to that.
Well, and it's almost like, I feel like they tried a little bit by getting Jay Bayona in for Fallen Kingdom, then people kind of rejected it a little bit.
Right.
And so, and then because Colin Trevorrow was, you know, let go from Episode 9, which, I mean, I think Episode 9 is the worst movie ever made.
This is
it's not a
Rise
hot take.
Of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. It's not that it's the worst movie ever made, because obviously I watched Sharknado in theaters a few weeks ago. Why? But for all the resources that could be thrown at something like that, and the fact that it is what it is the most, like, to me, it's the most, like, not even heartbreaking. It's just like,
oh no, here's the worst thing about the Rise of Skywalker. I got to see it on opening day at the Directors Guild because a friend of mine had an extra ticket and I went with him. This is all through, you know, Sarah, my wife's a member of the ADG Art Directors Guild. So we know a bunch of people through there. So we went and saw it there. J.J. Abrams was there. Ooh. Like, all fucking a million people were there.
It's like, I hear, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I'm not even blaming J.J. Like, it's the fact that they were like, we can't wait. It has to come out. Like,
Right. But so here's the saddest part is that, like, that should have been this moment of, like, pure, amazing bliss for me. And I literally often forget that even happened. Like, that's how underwhelmed.
You're, like, so traumatized.
Yeah. Well, so not even traumatized. But that's the thing. Traumatized would imply that I had strong feelings about it. Oof. To me, I'm just like, I literally forget that movie exists half the time. I'm not trying to talk shit on it. I'm just being honest about, like, I forget about it half the time.
I'm always somebody who loves something when it first comes out. The thrill of the opening night.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff. Rise of Skywalker is the only movie where opening night I was like, just sinking in my chair, like, oh, this feels bad. Like, I feel, I'm like, like, starting to disassociate. Like, it's just, and again, like, all this stuff. And again, it's good to talk about because the writers and actors strike going on. It's just like, literally, they were just like, again, this idea, it's like, find, you know, in Dominion, find the girl, like, you know, find Macy, like, who cares that you did with the Locust? Like, you feel guilty? No, you played your part. Like, all the people who have to work on things that they know that there's not enough time to make it good. There's not enough time to make it perfect. Like, you know, I've been rewatching Alien 3 recently, and it's like, the compositing's bad in that movie because they set a release date and they found David Fincher like the day, a few months before they had to start directing. But the thing you just reminded me of, and I really love this theory, is like Dotson's like last line in the movie. Is like even more poetic in that sense, because he's like, what's your story? As the Dilophosaurus are all spitting on him, because there's something very interesting about the idea that you see Nedry's can of embryos. He has that as like a relic.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, this metaphor for like a modern day studio exec, he finds a relic of this piece of nostalgia, can of embryos. And yet, so that must have meant that at some point, Biosyn or whoever must have gone to the island, found that can of embryos, whether those dinosaurs survived or not, because enough cooling in for 46 hours. Like, and yet he still, so he had the tools that he knew that Nedry died at the hands of a Dilophosaurus.
Yeah.
And then now he's confronted with them all spitting at him and he's like, what's your story?
Interesting. Like, yeah. No idea.
Had no idea.
No clue what any of it is.
Ooh, that makes that even more poetic and beautiful to me now.
I don't know if that's what Trevorrow was necessarily trying to write, but it was an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah. I really think that, like, especially with Battle at Big Rock that we watched, that, like, I personally feel like, I mean, getting let go, whatever you want to call it, of Star Wars must have been a very humbling experience.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And I feel ultimately that, like, again, despite how we both feel about this Jurassic World trilogy, I think it made him a better director and a better writer, even though maybe
we're
not satisfied with everything. But I feel like, I personally think that, like, the good things about Dominion are almost like the opposite of the bad things about that last Star Wars trilogy in a weird way. Of like, I love the idea of like slowly introducing more nostalgic characters because, you know, I don't, it's like, you don't front load it with this idea of like all of our favorite people are sad and it's like, I like that because it's true and it's real, but I really liked Dominion because I like that we got reintroduced to all of our favorite, you know, the trio, and they had their own story going on and we just kind of caught up with them. And I almost, again, it's that embarrassment of riches where I'm like, oh, I wish this would have been.
It's too many movies, man. That's like five different movies in one, because Jurassic Park is its own. And again, another studio thing of like, it's a weird monopoly where like, every movie has to be crammed into one movie now.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect metaphor for like, if these conglomerates weren't so gigantic because they have to keep merging and getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you could have had like five different studio films that were like mid-range, and you could have gotten directors who maybe, you know, you don't want to give them a $300 million movie, but somebody who could take like a $5 or $10 million movie and give them an opportunity to grow. And then all of a sudden you see these new voices and stuff.
We have an A24 Jurassic Park.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, isn't that what fucking the Adam Driver movie was that you're talking about?
Oh.
Wasn't that just an A24 movie?
No, it wasn't A24. Oh, it wasn't. Okay. But
I didn't see it, so I don't know.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate thing where I'm like, I should be championing alternate dinosaur stuff, but it wasn't even really a dinosaur.
I mean, if it wasn't good, it wasn't good, right? What are you going to do?
I want to go back to Jurassic Punk just for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, I think this is, a lot of this talk is emblematic of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I was so blown away by it because it's such a compelling story. And again, it just feels like so perfectly now and everything. I forget, how did you discover that again?
I was on a flight to New York earlier in the year, and it just randomly showed up, which is funny because I never watch. I have this weird, I've mentioned this on my podcast too, where I have this dumb thing that like my favorite thing to do on flights is to just watch other movies with no sound.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because I just like looking at like the cuts of images and it's sort of like, oh, if I can find can I follow the story here or is this? And it's sort of, it's super ADHD, which when I'm trapped on a plane and I can't go anywhere, it's like the one thing that gives me solace.
I mean, look, I have very strong memories of seeing Over the Hedge.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But like watching somebody else's seat.
It's weirdly fun to me. But for some reason, I was like skipping through and I was like, oh, Jurassic Punk, what the fuck is this? And because I remember Steve Williams, because I've seen a million docs.
Movies That Made Us?
Movies That Made Us. There's an ILM doc that's on Disney Plus.
That's right, which I still need to check out.
There's all this. I mean, like any
I'm
of
giving
the,
myself homework. Yeah, right.
All this stuff you need to watch. I've seen him in what's his name, Mark Dippy. I think Dippe is his last name. I know those two guys because I've followed a lot of like the ILM history stuff. So then I knew that guy. I knew Steve Williams before this.
Cool.
So I was like, oh, it's a doc about Steve Williams. And I knew that he was kind of like this weirdo, like, you know, machismo kind of like fake army guy, like not really army, but like, you know, would have like boots and cargo pants.
Well, it is just, I mean, we've been talking about all the sensitive artist nature and he just very much, I mean, definitely after watching this documentary, you definitely get that he is that inside, but like,
yes.
His exterior is just like, what up, you fucking nerds?
Yeah.
Like
Canadian, which is my favorite part.
Yeah.
Canadian
yeah.
who loves guns.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Which is so funny. But I also knew that he was the one, him and Dippy were the guys who made the fucking T-Rex.
The original CGI test
yes.
that convinced Spielberg to make Jurassic Park, like to,
yeah.
instead of doing the stop, the go stop, motion, yeah, stop yeah. motion.
Stop
to
motion
make,
with Phil Tippett. Basically put Phil Tippett out of a job.
Yes. Don't you mean extinct?
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly.
I mean, as somebody who, you know, worked in, I mean, particularly worked on, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of different from what you did because you were working on film sets.
Yes.
But I mean, like, is it just that, are you just interested in those kinds of stories of just like how the sausage is made and then just also the kind of wild world of like, because again, we grew up like, I think Lord of the Rings in some ways sort of made us romanticize making movies
yes.
and in a way that can, that was almost kind of like harmful for our generation.
They're very effective propaganda pieces. Most of these BTS documentaries.
And this is the Jurassic Punk is not that.
No. It shows you. Yeah. It's like, it's very like, mask off kind of like, you know, this guy like fucking did not like approve of his boss and like made it publicly known. And like, you know, and then he's like, I don't know why no one wanted to hire me. And like, it's kind of like warts and all kind of thing.
Yeah.
But no, I think
it's harrowing. It's like a ghost. It's like a Ghost of Christmas Future kind of movie, you know, like,
But not to like talk too much about George Lucas. I don't know why it keeps coming up in this conversation, but
I mean, you know, it's THX and
THX Skeletor Ranch and all this stuff. But ILM, you know, it's famously up north. So I guess part of it too, I always think of like ILM as like our roots in a way.
Yeah.
Because I'm from the Bay Area originally.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like this point of pride. And I don't know why I feel that way, but I just, even though I've been to ILM once, I actually did get to tour the facilities. I don't know. I think I like, it's like, it's the same reason I follow tech stuff where it's like, I'm not in tech at all, but to me it feels like, if you're from Texas and like not knowing anything about the oil industry seems kind of weird, like even just like having a passing understanding of it just because it's so omnipresent. So like tech and like, you know, ILM and all that stuff feels like, okay, well, this is where I'm from. Like this is a big part of the history of like, you know, my surroundings. And obviously George Lucas was like this huge fucking tower of everything.
Because like I think that there's only, I think I've evolved this, but I'm curious to know what you think. There's genetic engineering, the Jurassic Park way to bring humans and dinosaurs together.
Yeah,
the idea of like scientists making dinosaurs, the Frankenstein method.
Right. How do you write? You're basically saying the premise of like how do you do another dinosaur story?
Yes. So you have the Frankenstein method, Jurassic Park method. Scientists create dinosaurs.
Right.
You have alternate history. So you got like something like Dinotopia.
Right.
You have rift in space time, like, why can't I remember it right now? That British dinosaur TV series that was on for a long time.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember what it's called. Why can't I remember what it's called right now? It's so embarrassing. I can hear my friend Tom being like,
screaming at the recording.
I love you, Tom. I'm so sorry. Dinosaur British.
British.
I love you, Tom.
A bit odd, innit?
I said, it just gave me British dinosaurs. like Baryonyx.
When did it come out? When was this? Early 2000s? Oh,
Dinosaur British TV series. This was like this was like in between Jurassic Park 3. Primeval. There we
go.
Sorry, Tom. Primeval was like, there was like a organization that came together because dinosaurs were coming through like portals in space and time and
that's
stuff.
That's cool.
So you have.
Was it a good show?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Sorry, Tom.
I was like, that sounds like a cool premise.
Some people really like it. I've heard it gets really good after a while. It's like Doctor Who vein kind of stuff or whatever, but more like realistic and edgy. But yeah, so you have Jurassic Park, you got Dinotopia, you know, alternate stuff. You got scientists, you got Rift in Space Time. You have just go back in time.
Back in time, yeah.
And then what was the other one? I think that's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or you just, no, because that's alternate history. But it's like, yeah. I mean,
what else can you,
listeners, like if there's other methods that I'm totally missing, I mean, or just you're in the time of the dinosaurs, Land yes. Before Time.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those to me are like the kind of five, like taxonomy or like genre, or not even genre, but just like the taxonomic method for like, how yes. do you make a dinosaur story?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, and that's the thing though. It's the genre ultimately is what you need to figure out, because dinosaur is not really a genre.
Yes.
You have to figure out like what the genre of the story is that would merit telling the story about, involves dinosaurs, yes. whether it's about the dinosaurs or not.
Yeah. But I guess in the sense of like how we're talking about how Jurassic Park has a monopoly on it, I think like one of the issues that has come into is that like, yeah, Jurassic Park, like any modern day franchise where we're so lore focused, so consistency yeah. universe creating that it was like this thing of like Jurassic Park was this in a way edutainment that showed dinosaurs in the first time, but also it's like, how do you reconcile that with like making a consistent universe when like, shouldn't every Jurassic Park movie update the science, you know?
Yeah. But I also just think too, I mean, like I'm sort of thwarting my own point about it being Monopoly, but like it just makes the most sense of True. It being like a park.
Yeah.
And like, it just is like, it hits on the same themes that it always hits on the same themes, but they're evergreen, man. It's just
no.
It's always going to be corporate interests. We're going to try and take it and weaponize it. It does make sense that it would be in a park. It makes sense that they're always going to fucking kill everybody. You know, there's always makes sense that the scientists aren't necessarily, it's like science or like the artists battling with the studio kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, this is what we think it should be. And other people, they're like animals. And I mean, I will say that the other thing that kind of, I understand the extrapolation of what ended up happening with it in the last three movies, but I don't necessarily care for it as much.
Sure.
Is the sort of the really what's the word I'm thinking of? The human qualities that are really placed on all the animals, on all the dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, it's Blue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Blue's daughter is like a clone. Like, it becomes a little bit goofy to me. Like,
sure.
I know everyone made fun of the whole Chris Pratt, you know, I mean, obviously make fun of Chris Pratt as one does, but we've already like shit on the whole, like, whoa, like him putting his hands out around the, it's not an illogical extrapolation of what would happen with it, with that story. That does make kind of sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's still really annoying to me. But.
Sure. Well, and it's also this thing sometimes where my pet peeve is that like the most science fiction thing about all these movies is the dinosaur part, and everything else is actually yeah. more realistic because we do have weaponized animals. And
yes,
I just watched a video the other day about how like the CIA like made a cat walkie talkie essentially, where they put they made a cat Walkman where they basically, or like, they basically like put a recording device in a cat and got it to tried to get it to like run over to these Russian diplomats in a park in DC. Like they literally made, like after 3 years of research and like made this cat that had a recording device in its brain, and like, and then it got hit by a car.
Why would they do it on a cat? That's the worst possible animal to like.
That's what everyone says, but maybe people had different attitudes about cats back then. But anyway, but it's just that thing to your earlier point and to this conversation, like it would just be nice to see dinosaurs be done in other ways, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, I don't necessarily, but like you said, there's only so many ways you can do it, but that's okay. Like there's every fucking movie is already something that's been done.
Way.
It's not like there's only one way to do like a romantic comedy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like God knows there's so many, it's just different characters,
which is like you're putting letters in a mailbox and you're traveling back and forth in time between it's romance through time travel.
Well, this is what I really liked about the second, about Fallen Kingdom, is that was the closest it got to a kind of genre. It's like, it's a monster in the house movie. That's all it was. Like, it was a big movie. It was a huge movie. They spent a lot of money in it, but you can see the sort of small movie that's in it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I think
you could totally do that. You could just have it be one, but also kind of what the end of Lost World was.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one dinosaur that's running around the streets and they're trying to fucking get that. Like you could get away with it.
Yeah. Kind of homage and.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, even more importantly to that idea. Yeah. What are the genres of a time travel movie? What are the genres of doing an alternate history where we live with dinosaurs? What's the themes of rips in space time and put dinosaurs with humans again?
Yeah.
Like what are the actual like themes to make more compelling stories with dinosaurs in them or whatever.
Yeah. And that's the thing, again, the first one does such a good job of establishing those themes about, like, it's about man thinking that he's God.
Yeah.
Right. Or is it man kills God, or man kills God, God, dinosaur kills man, woman inherits the earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're like, yeah, it's an evergreen thing. Like,
yeah.
There's no reason to bring back dinosaurs other than, like, they're awesome and we want to.
Because they're fucking awesome.
They're awesome, yeah.
Man, this has been so much fun.
It's been great.
We could keep talking for hours, but...
I will also talk for hours.
But, I mean, we'll continue to talk for hours after this. But yes. I just have the two kind of, like, fun questions.
Yeah.
Whenever I like to do these one-on-one interviews. The two most obvious ones. Mm-hmm. Would you go to Jurassic Park if it was real?
Which, we're going to the first one?
Either or.
Let's see. Yeah, I would, probably.
Which, I mean...
fucking get killed, but yeah.
I'm always just like, the curiosity would just get the best of me.
Yeah.
And also, you're hoping that it's like, I'm not in a movie, so this is the one day where it doesn't, you know... Because, like, you think about Jurassic World, like, the park was open for, I believe, almost 10 years before it...
Is that how long it is in the story?
Something like that. Yeah. Like after... There's some, like... canon online content that is that when Jurassic World came out, that it was like, you know, JP3 happens.
Yeah.
You know, like Ellie Sattler meets Macy's mom, who's giving lectures. The Pteranodons from JP3 get caught by Vincent D'Onofrio's character because he's like working some military thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Hammond dies at some point between Lost World and JP3. And then Miss Ronnie buys InGen, and then they start developing Jurassic Park. Yeah. And then in 2005, I think Jurassic Park opens.
Jurassic World opens.
Yeah. Claire is in college and gets an internship there.
Okay.
There's a great book by Tess Sharp called The Evolution of Claire, where she's a 10-year-old, my age.
Oh, my God.
Watching the San Diego incident
on TV. Like on the news. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I love it.
That's interesting.
But yeah, so like in my head, as far as my curiosity goes, where it's like, you know, that was one day out of, you know,
right.
10 years.
There's a lot of great days where people did not all get eaten and
killed.
Yeah.
That's the like Max series or whatever, where it's just like a day in the life at Jurassic World.
Yeah. You're just like the guy who's cleaning up all the shit like from his perspective.
Just like in the back of the cage.
The T-Rex. Stop eating people. It's so smelly.
Yeah.
But no, I would absolutely. I mean, the other shot I remember so vividly as a kid is Alan putting his hands and ear on the side of the Triceratops as it's breathing. I just remember being like, oh my God, like that. I you can't overstate how crazy that shit was. And that's a non CG shot, right?
That's an animatronic.
Yeah.
And it looks real. It looks real today. It looked real when we saw it on that janky screen.
Right.
At the weird secret.
The Chinese theater. But, and I think the other thing too is, we're on the Jurassic Park podcast. I can talk about how much I love these things.
Yes.
Much of that movie too has like, and these are just filmmaking choices, right? I get annoyed when I see the stuff now where it's like, and it's not railing against the CG parts. I don't dislike the cool CG stuff. It's like the stuff that sits with you is that Dennis put the shaving cream on the taco that's next to him in the beginning. It's that weird sound. It's him. It's Alan Grant putting his head and his fucking hands on the side of that. It's these weird visceral moments in those movies that really make you feel like you're in it more than any insane, you know, $5 million shot of like a T-Rex fighting a Spinosaurus or whatever the fuck.
The plopping of the mud as you see the shaving can cream get buried in the mud.
That too.
You
know? But like, so that's, and again, part of it might just be that I was young. So like it has much more of an impact on me, but I feel like when you see the newer movies, you don't get that sense of it as much. It doesn't feel like a lived in place. It feels like a big spectacle.
I will leave you on this as far as that goes. Is that one of my favorite moments in Fallen Kingdom is the surgery scene on the boat.
Oh, right.
Because you're getting, they're tugging at your heartstrings because you're seeing the flashbacks to Blue as a little baby.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I wish this would have been in even the first movie. But like, you see Blue like shed a tear
because the
surgery is so painful. And I think that is one of the greatest moments in the entire franchise, and I stand by it.
It's liquid, but again, it's textural. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like just water coming from it, right? Or dirt, or the mud, or the fucking shit, right?
Yeah, yeah. Big pile of shit.
You forget how much they're animals. You know what I mean? Like, they're animals. That's what when you go to a fucking safari, when you go to a San Diego Wild Animal Park, it smells like stuff. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, I feel like when you watch one of these movies, you should be smelling it in a way.
Oh my God, smell-o-vision.
Not smell-o-vision necessarily as much, but it lacks a kind of texture to it, you know? And I think that's...
Well, the best movies made now remember that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's more than just CG or not CG, because again...
Or visual fidelity.
Visual fidelity, yeah. There's plenty of stuff that was done in CG that's beautiful. It's just more like, those are the kinds of things that make me think of... It's that true interaction of the person with the thing itself.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of standing and being in awe of it.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that a lot.
But I would have loved to have gone to Jurassic Park. I would love, or actually, I'm sorry, one more example. The fucking sneezing, was it the Brachiosaurus?
Yeah, yeah.
That's another one.
God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you. Like, those are the things that are very, they're so textural. That's like,
yeah, we needed more dinosaur snot in the new movies.
Yeah, there's none of it. They've missed out. They missed out on these moments to it that make you feel like they're things that exist.
Yeah.
Rather than cool shots.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. I totally agree. But speaking of cool shots.
Yes.
How would you like to be chomped, stomped, glomped?
Oh, like, or how would I want my death to be?
By a dinosaur.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's hard. I change it all the time. So no pressure.
I mean, I feel like the most appropriate death for me would be, you know, getting eaten on the toilet, because that's where I'd be spending most of my time anyway. That's not necessarily how I'd like to go, but I feel like that's probably the most appropriate for me.
It's very practical.
Yeah. Who is it in the second one? The dude that it's like the not weapon specialist, the equipment specialist.
Oh, Eddie Carr.
Eddie Carr gets torn apart by like
Richard Skiff.
By the two different T-Rexes. I feel like that's kind of fun. Yeah, T-Rex, I think, would be how I would die.
Like a wishbone situation.
Yeah. Oh, again, one more thing in the Fallen Kingdom that I thought was really fun was in the opening shot, or the teaser of that guy who's like, oh, what are you? They can't hear. And he jumps on the fucking the ladder that's coming out of the helicopter. And then he gets narrowly avoided by the T-Rex. And then I can't remember what the dinosaur is called. The one that comes out of the water. Just fucking eats him. I feel like that was a really good death, too.
Yeah,
like,
that was fun.
Any of those would be fun, I think. Those would be a good time.
I love it.
Yeah, all those are really... There's no good... I mean,
there's no wrong way to be eaten by a dinosaur.
Except for, what's her name in Jurassic World? The was she the au pair or the babysitter or whatever?
The assistant.
Yeah, the assistant.
Katie McGrath's character.
That was like really... And I know people were upset about that online, because I remember being like, that was weirdly like unnecessarily cruel.
I mean, you got to look at, you know, Jurassic Park hated lawyers. Jurassic World hates personal assistants, yeah, you know.
There's such haters on it, but yeah. But no, I'm going to say officially either toilet, maybe best case scenario, ripped apart by two different T-Rexes while I'm taking a shit on the toilet.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, perfect way to end the episode.
Yes. Where can people follow you, find you? Also, I didn't mention your podcast, but where can people listen to that?
Oh, I thank you. Yes. So for everyone who's listening, if you're in the Los Angeles area on December 1st through the 3rd, I will be at the LA Convention Center for Los Angeles Comic-Con. Please come see me in small press. I've got books, I got prints, I got all kinds of fun stuff. Additionally, in regards to the Musical Splaining podcast, we did make the announcement recently that our show will be ending this season. So we've only got a few episodes left. Please go ahead and check those out. And lastly, I do have an announcement that will be coming shortly about a new podcast. Please stay tuned for that. It will be announced on the Musical Splaining show, or it will also be available, or I will also be announcing it through all my social media. So please remember to follow me at Covetarian on Twitter, at PermaFriends on Instagram. Stay tuned. New show coming. I will be making an announcement very soon. Thanks.
Yes. And then, you know, Blacksmith Films is my website where, you know, if you're interested in getting a copy of the Mothman's Compendium of Southern California Cryptids, you can purchase them there along with the other books, so on and so forth. But yes, I think that covers all the different places I can be. Yes.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
So great. I'm so excited we did this.
Yeah. As I mentioned, I, the podcast that I do, I'm the heel on the podcast because I don't like the podcast. I'm sorry. I don't like the, I don't like musicals. So I have to sit through them. So I've only been able to go on like one or two other podcasts where I get to talk about stuff that I like. So it's very exciting for me. I have this like pent up, nice, positive things that I want to talk about that I don't get to do. So it really means a lot that.
Oh, you know, no, I'm so glad. Yeah. I so could lovely. Tell we were kindred spirits of the.
Yeah. Thing. And we've only known each other now for a couple of months, which is.
Not even a couple months. It's been like a month and a half.
Through so the wonderful Hannah Hillam, who introduced us. And it turns out that we live fucking down the street from each other. And by no surprise, you've become close friends with my wife, Sarah, who that's what happens.
Anybody well, we're cousins. Sarah. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
We've been telling everyone that we're just cousins at this point.
Yes. But thank you. What a wonderful time to be able to talk about like an awesome movie from back in the day that I love. Thank you.
And it holds up forever. And thank you so much. And thank you, listeners. Until next time, hold on to your butts. And that's how it goes.
Stay clever, girls.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.